She had everything. The name, the gold, the fiancé, the whole future already mapped out. Until the night the sea swallowed her father's fortune and took her place in the world along with it. The man who swore he loved her broke off the engagement in three lines and chose, in her place, her own cousin. And then she was cast out of her own home. From a merchant's daughter to a servant in a bathhouse, all it cost was one winter. Now they were inviting her to the wedding of her cousin and her ex. Just to watch her arrive alone, in mourning, shrinking into a corner. But Renna swore she would not walk in with her head bowed. She would arrive on the arm of a man so beautiful that the entire court would forget they had once thrown her away. There was just one problem. She had no man at all. What she had were the last coins sewn into the lining of her mattress, and the address of a house where gentlemen could be hired for a night. In that line of men for sale, she pointed to the only one whose face was hidden beneath a hood. That one will do. He spoke like a man born to command. He smelled of the forest and of something wild. He knew things a hired gentleman had no business knowing. And that very night, they said, an Alpha King was loose in the city, in disguise, with no one recognizing him. She thought she had bought herself just any man for a night. She had no idea who she had just taken by the arm. The towels still smelled of ash and soap when the gossip came through the door of the Crimson Bathhouse. Did you hear? Liz dropped the laundry basket on the counter and leaned over it, cheeks red, eyes bright with the news. Behind her, two of the washerwomen stopped wringing out their cloths to listen. They say there's an Alpha King roaming loose through Duskmere, in disguise. Liz lowered her voice, unable to hold back a grin. And the disguise isn't going too well, because half the city already swears they've seen him, two streets up, hemmed in by women on every side. A collective sigh went up through the damp room. Renna kept lining up the folded towels, one on top of the other, edges squared, and let a small smile touch her mouth with nothing behind it. Duskmere was like that. A kingdom where gold opened more doors than wolf blood, ruled by an old alpha content at the side of the Luna growing old beside him, an alpha's mate, the one who shared his throne and his bed, the mother of the pack. Here, a foreign sovereign was an event, and another Alpha King was the kind of news that could make a whole city forget the cold. Ronan Halloran, said another of the women, savoring the name, the Alpha King of Corhiven. The neighboring kingdom, right up against the northern border, the one who simply will not marry. That's the one. Liz fanned herself with her hand. Turns down every suitor who comes near him. His council has been begging him for years to choose a Luna and give them an heir, and still he does nothing. They say he gathers admirers from kingdom to kingdom and ties himself to none of them. Too handsome to go unnoticed, too free to be caught. What a pity, one of them laughed. Imagine being the woman who catches a man like that. They laughed together, dreamy, their hands still wet. Renna picked up the next towel. That was the business of a girl who no longer existed. A girl who still believed love could survive ruin. That girl had been left behind in a high-ceilinged room that smelled of new cloth, and no one ever heard of her again. Because Renna had not always scrubbed floors. The only daughter of one of the richest merchants in Duskmere, she had grown up among silk gowns washed three times over to make them soft, among court balls, and the quiet certainty that she would marry Lord Ferris, heir to one of the oldest houses in the kingdom, promised to her since the two of them were children with scraped knees. She had everything. the surname, the dowry, the fiancé, the whole future already mapped out, until the night her father's ship went down. It was the entire fortune inside a single hull, silk, spices, amber, all bought on credit, sailing home. The sea swallowed it whole in one night of storm, and with the cargo went the credit, the name, and the ground beneath the family's feet. Her father could not bear it. He died a few weeks later, more of shame than of any illness, and within that same month, Renna learned two truths about love: that it had a price, and that she could no longer pay it. And there was one more thing her father's gold had always covered, and that ruin laid bare. Caro blood was Omega blood. The lowest caste of the Pax, the caste of those who serve others. In any other kingdom, that alone would have condemned the family to the dirt. But Duskmere was Duskmere, the city where a purse of coins weighed more than a bloodline, and her father's gold bought gowns, curtsies, and a fiancé. As long as there was gold, no one asked about Renna's wolf. Just as well, because her beast was lazy to the point of embarrassment. It slept like a bear sunk in an endless slumber, deaf to every call, and dragging that sluggish thing out, on the very few times it ever stirred, was more trouble than it was worth. Renna grew up learning not to count on her. Ferris ended the engagement in a letter of 3 lines. 3 lines, after a whole lifetime of promises. And he chose, in her place, her own cousin, Lady Odette. The very one who had grown up in the room next door, wearing the dresses Renna handed down when she grew bored of them, swearing hand in hand that the two of them were more than cousins, they were sisters. It was Odette who announced the wedding. It was Odette who made a point of saying with a sweet smile of poisoned honey, "You were always the dull version of me, little cousin. No one picks the rough sketch when they can have the portrait." With no father, no mother, her mother had died while Renna was still crawling, no name and not a coin, she was put out of the house that had once been hers, while her cousin settled into the very rooms that still carried her scent. And she ended up in the back of a bathhouse on Lantern Row. Lantern Row lies in the pleasure quarter of Duskmere, a street lined with taverns, inns, bathhouses, and houses of companions, all of them with their doors open until dawn, drawing travelers from every corner of the continent. At the Crimson Bathhouse, where Renna had been taken in, 2 kinds of women lived: those who scrubbed the floors and heated the water, and those who sold companionship. The latter had the best rooms and the best gowns, because they had to be well kept to draw in custom. Ladies of companionship, they were called, when one was being polite. Courtesans, in the mouth of the common folk. Renna, raised to be waited upon, was left with the scrubbing brush. The hands that had known only fine gloves and silk now lived cracked from the hot water and the lye, and she did not complain. Complaining cost energy, and energy was the only thing she had left. The wedding invitation arrived on an afternoon of low skies, the kind that threatens snow and never delivers. Renna was on her knees, scrubbing the stone floor of the entrance, when a pair of satin shoes stopped a hand's breadth from her basin, shoes far too clean for that street. She lifted her eyes slowly, and her stomach dropped before the face had even come together. Odette. Her cousin stood there in the flesh, in a fur-lined cloak, her face rosy with cold and with pleasure, holding an envelope sealed in red wax between 2 fingers. She could have sent a page. She could have sent a messenger. But she crossed Lantern Row on her own heels for the sheer pleasure of handing it over herself, for the sheer pleasure of seeing Renna small. "Little cousin." Odette smiled, and the smile did not reach her eyes. "What a cozy little place." Renna rose slowly, drying her hands on her grimy apron, and did not lower her chin. She had lost everything but that. "Odette, I'm getting married." Her cousin held out the envelope, and the gesture was almost gentle, which only made it worse. "To Ferris, at the end of the season. and I couldn't bear the thought of you not being there, after everything we once were to each other. The red seal gleamed on the wax, flawless. Renna looked at it and did not put out her hand. I know what you're doing. I'm inviting my family. Odette tilted her head, her curls swaying. Don't come alone, darling. It would be sad. Everyone will be there. That whole court that was once yours. Imagine the talk, if poor Wolf Renna turns up in mourning, shrinking into a corner. She pulled a face of pity so well rehearsed it was almost admirable. Bring someone, if you can. It was the "if you can" that did it. Renna felt the blood climb the back of her neck, hot, and she drew a slow breath through her nose so as not to give her the satisfaction. She took the envelope. Her finger brushed Odette's, and her cousin pulled her hand back as if she had touched something filthy. I'll be there, Renna said, and her voice came out steadier than she expected. And I won't be alone. Something flickered across Odette's face. Curiosity, perhaps, or the first hint of a doubt. Her cousin studied her face for a moment, found nothing there but stubbornness, and set the sweet smile back in place. Wonderful, she said, already gathering her cloak to be gone from that street as fast as she could. I can't wait to meet him. And she left, leaving behind the costly scent of her perfume and a silence that weighed more than the whole bathhouse put together. Renna stood there with the envelope in her hand, her heart pounding in her throat. What did I just promise? She had no man at all. That night, lying on the cot in the back, Renna did not sleep. The envelope rested on her chest, rising and falling with her breath. And every time she shut her eyes, she saw the same thing. The crowded hall, the faces of the court that had once called her its future lady. Odette arm in arm with Ferris, every one of them turning to watch the poor ruined cousin walk in alone, head bowed, in mourning, exactly as they expected. No. She had been the kingdom's sad story once already. She would not be it a second time. If she could not arrive whole, she would arrive dazzling. On the arm of a man so beautiful, so plainly above Ferris, that the entire court would forget in a single glance that she had ever been cast aside. Let it be a lie. Let it last one night. One night would be enough. There was only one problem, and it came in two parts. The first, she knew no man willing to play the part. The second, the only coins she had left were hidden in the lining of the mattress, sewn in there on the day she learned that doors slam shut all at once. But there was a name, Madame Sorcha. Sorcha was a regular at the Crimson Bathhouse, a woman of heavy rings and shrewd eyes who ran further down the same street, Madame Sorcha's house, a place where men requested courtesans and ladies, in their turn hired gentlemen of companionship, handsome men, smooth of tongue, engaged to escort a widow to a dinner, an unwed woman to a ball, or if the lady so wished and paid well for it, to warm her bed until dawn. Just letting the thought wander that far, Renna's face went hot, her cheeks pink with a foolish blush there was no one around to see. That was what Madame Sorcha's house was for. Any man or woman of means who needed a strong arm for one night and could pay for discretion. Once, charmed by such a beautiful she-wolf scrubbing floors for coins, Sorcha had offered Renna a place among the courtesans. Renna refused on the spot, but she kept the address. She kept it in case the day ever came. That day had come. A hired escort would not serve, of course, for what these men usually served for. But money buys silence, and a handsome man dressed as a noble, with a borrowed surname and a rehearsed smile, would serve the plan perfectly. Walk into the hall with her head high. Let Ferris choke. Let Odette lose her color. And be gone before midnight undid the spell. Renna ran her fingers along the seam of the mattress until she felt the small lump of coins beneath the fabric. It was little. It was all she had. And she had already lost far too much to be afraid of losing the rest. At the first hint of light, She tore the seam open with her teeth, counted the cold coins in her palm one by one, and closed her fist over them. May the moon goddess forgive me for this madness. But I am going to buy myself a fiancé. The crest embroidered on his sleeves had ruined everything. Ronan Halloran realized his mistake too late, when the third woman in less than one street had already found a reason to brush against him. The cut of the coat, the silver thread at the cuffs, the bearing of a man who had never once carried his own burden. Everything about him screamed noble blood, and on Lantern Row noble blood smelled like easy gold. Your Majesty. Bram appeared at his side, his voice low, his broad shoulders parting the crowd without effort. Bram was his beta, his right hand, the second in the pack's hierarchy, and the only man in Korhaven allowed to call him a fool to his face. I told you this would happen. You did. If anyone from the Duskmere court recognizes you here, outside the castle at this hour, on the street of pleasure houses, I know what they say. Ronan stopped beneath the shadow of an eave, away from the lantern light, and pulled his gaze off the ladies circling him. Go back to the castle, Bram. My king. Go. His voice dropped, and in it was the weight that made older wolves lower their heads. I wanted one night. One single night, where no one looked at me waiting for me to choose a bride, seal a treaty, or give them an heir. Go. Meet me before dawn. Bram studied him for a long moment, found the same old stubbornness there, and gave in, as he always gave in. Before dawn, he repeated, and vanished into the crowd. Ronan breathed. For the first time in weeks, no one was watching him. The Council of Korhaven had sent half a world of escorts with him to Duskmere, for the negotiations, for the grand wedding of one of the allied houses, for the endless task of parading the unwed Alpha King before every court with a daughter of marrying age. He had endured 3 days of dinners and rehearsed smiles, and on the third night he slipped out through the back gates like a boy, just to walk down a street with no crown and breathe a little. And the crown followed him even off his head. It was in his sleeves, in the cut, in the smell of privilege. That was when he ran into the man. The fellow was hurrying out of Madame Sorcia's house, hooded to the eyes, pale as tallow, sweating despite the cold and smothering a cough against his sleeve. When he came face to face with Ronan, with the fine coat, the bearing, the crest, his eyes went wide, and he stepped back, torn between a bow and the panic of a man caught where he had no business being. Forgive me, sir. His voice came out hoarse, scraped raw. I work for the Madame. But today I woke burning with fever, and she won't have a sick man in the house. She has a horror of contagion, dismisses on the spot anyone who turns up coughing. If she sees me like this, she'll never call on me again. And I have no other bread. Ronan looked him up and down. The dark hood. The plain clothes, no embroidery, no crest. Nothing to betray where the man came from. The clothes of an invisible man. A small, dangerous smile touched his mouth. What was your engagement tonight? I was to be requested, sir. One of the gentlemen of the house. The man coughed again. But I can't. Not like this. Ronan took a purse from his belt and laid it in the man's trembling hand. By its weight, it was more than the man would gather in a year of nights. Then give me the hood, he said, and disappear from Duskmere until that fever passes. No one will miss you. I promise. The man looked at the purse, looked at the madman of a noble offering it, and asked no questions. A hungry man never does. Trembling between relief and fever, he pulled off the hood, put on the fine coat Ronan handed him in exchange, embroidery, crest and all, and vanished up the street before he could change his mind. Ronan drew the hood over his face. The cloth smelled of fever and cheap pipe smoke, and none of it frightened him. A man's sickness did not take hold in an alpha, his wolf would burn off any fever before it could root, the same way it closed a deep wound in the span of one night. The contagion that terrified Madame Sorcha was, to him, no more than a foul smell. All that was left was the disguise. And beneath the hood that would have laid any other man low, Ronan smiled, because for the first time in 3 days, he was no one. He should have left. He should have gone back to the castle, slept in the wide bed of an honored guest, and woken a king. Instead, he walked into Madame Sorcha's house. Just to see, he told himself, just for 1 hour. Just to know what it is to be any man at all in a city that doesn't know my name. But it was not only curiosity, and he knew it. It was the delicious absurdity of the thing. He, the Alpha King of Corhaven, who turned down princesses the way other men wave off a second course, who had whole courts tripping over one another to push a daughter at him. He, hooded in a house like this, about to find out what it was to be chosen by the weight of a coin. Someone was going to pay for him for one night. Perfect amusement. Renna drank before she went in. She found a bottle forgotten in the back of the crimson bathhouse, the harsh liquor the courtesans used to warm their nights, and took one long swallow just to make her knees stop shaking. It burned going down. Good. She needed to burn on the inside, or she would never cross that threshold. Sorcha's house was another world. Tapestries on the walls, low candelabra, the air heavy with incense, and with laughter drifting from closed rooms. Madame Sorcha received her with her rings glinting and a smile that understood everything in a single glance. The pretty she-wolf from the bathhouse. Sorcha circled her slowly, appraising. Changed your mind about my offer at last? I'm not here to stay. Renna lifted her chin. I'm here to hire. A gentleman. Sorcha measured her from head to toe, amused, and clicked her tongue. Hire. Who would have thought? The she-wolf who scrubs the bathhouse floor, scraping together coin by coin to pay for a man for a single night. She tilted her head, almost with pity. It must be hard, dear. So many hands cracked from the scrubbing brush to spend it all at once. It's not like that. Renna's face went hot. It's only to escort me. To a wedding. Nothing. Nothing more than that. Ah. Sorcha laughed low, and there were years of trade in that laugh. What a waste, then. She drew closer, her voice dropping to the tone of someone offering a secret. Think it over, girl. I have human nobles coming through that door every night. Men with full purses who have never in their lives come near a real she-wolf. You have no idea what they would give, just to watch you turn. To watch you change your skin, gild your eyes, become a beast, and turn back into a girl. She snapped her fingers in the air. Fortunes. And you would not have to lie with a single one of them. All it would take is that beauty of yours, those eyes, and what you are beneath the skin. I do not have one she-wolf in this house. You would be the most coveted thing on Lantern Row. Renna knew her own wolf far too well. The one that slept so deep, there were days she doubted she had her at all. Her eyes almost never gilded. If Sorcha knew the sheer laziness of that beast, perhaps she would lower her offer. But that she kept to herself. Perhaps another time, she said, and the blush gave her away before her voice could. Sorcha laughed, satisfied, and patted her arm as she led her toward the corridor of stone and thin curtains. I never give up, girl. Never. One day you'll cave. She winked over her shoulder. Now come and choose your gentleman. She led Renna into a warm room where the gentlemen of the house waited, lined up side by side, most of them wearing only a towel at the waist, displayed as if for sale at a fair, because in a way they were. Renna felt her face catch fire at once. Never seen a man, girl? Sorcha laughed low. I have. Renna looked away, then could not help looking again, then looked away once more. Just not. So many. all at once, like this. Oh, never mind. Sorsha cackled. Renna forced herself to scan the line the way one picks fish at the market. Cool, practical. Some were handsome, others plain. They all wore the same trained smile, and not one of them would serve, because not one of them looked dangerous enough to make the Duskmere court believe that poor Renna had won herself a noble. And then she saw him. At the end of the line, leaning into the shadow, was a man who stood apart from all the rest. He was not in a towel. He was dressed in dark trousers and a dark cloak, the hood pulled over his face, so that only the strong line of his jaw and his mouth showed. Tall, shoulders too wide for the gap of the wall. Still in a way the others could not imitate, the stillness of a man who does not need to show himself off to be looked at. Renna pointed at him before she could think. Why does that one hide his face? Sorsha raised her eyebrows, and for a moment seemed intrigued herself by the hooded man at the end of her own line. But business spoke louder than the strangeness. Good question. She turned to him, amused. Well, tell the lady. Why all the mystery? The voice that came from under the hood was calm and deep, and it ran down Renna's spine without asking leave. I like to keep the suspense. Renna narrowed her eyes. No games. I'm paying for a service. As you wish. He shrugged, without the slightest sign of offense, and she had the distinct impression the man was smiling beneath the cloth. Sorsha laughed again, delighted. For the cheek, I'll give you a fine discount on that one. She turned back to Renna. So? Which of them? Renna ran her eyes over the line one last time. Good sense said to choose one of the smiling ones, one of the easy ones, one she could control. Her eyes went back to the hooded man. She was in no position to be choosy, and by his build, she imagined that beneath the hood, there had to be a face to match the body. But it was not only that. There was something about that man that made her want to yank the hood off just to know what was hidden. And the sleeping wolf inside her, the one that almost never stirred, lifted her head in a dull jolt, alert, as if she recognized something Renna's mind could not reach. She lifted her chin and pointed. That one will do. He caught her scent before the curtain finished opening. Sweet pine and sea air. Forest and ocean in the same breath. The smell of something wild that once had a home near the water and lost it. It struck Ronan in the chest like a slow blow, and the wolf inside him, asleep so long that he no longer expected to feel a thing, rose all at once, hackles up, and sank its claws into a single thought his reason had no time to argue with. Mine. No. Impossible. Ronan drew a deep breath beneath the hood, trying to push it down, and could not. The scent was everywhere. In his mouth. In his lungs. In some deeper place he had not visited in years. He lifted his eyes just enough to see her. And there she stood, chin high, faking a coldness her racing heart betrayed, pointing at him the way one points at a horse to be bought. A she-wolf in a worn red gown, with eyes that had wept and sworn never again. Beautiful in a way that asked no permission. And she had no idea who he was. This was his cue to stand. Hand back the hood, tell the truth, and return to the castle where he would sleep as the Alpha King of Korhaven. Ronan opened his mouth to correct the mistake, and closed it again. May the moon goddess forgive him. He wanted to see where this would lead. She took him away from the curious eyes of the house, to an empty corridor where a single candle burned, and it was there, far from the audience, that Renna realized the size of the trouble she had gotten herself into. Take off the hood, she ordered. I need to see what I'm working with. He obeyed slowly, in the way of a man who does everything in his own time, and pushed the cloth back. The air fled her lungs. Renna had to dig her nails into her own palm not to react. He was worse than she had feared. The strong face, the dark hair falling unkempt over his brow, the stubble marking his jaw, and the eyes. Too intense, too watchful, fixed on her with a calm that did not fit a man who sold himself for coin. The wolf inside her growled softly, on alert, and Renna told her to be quiet. There was something wrong with that man, something too refined. When he settled his shoulders, it was with the gesture of a man used to carrying clothing far heavier than a threadbare cloak, furs, chains, the weight of a name. Subtle, but too refined to slip by. What does it matter? She thought. I don't need him to be honest. I need him to be handsome, and to know how to smile. And handsome he was, offensively so. Renna took a folded sheet from her pocket, worn soft from handling. On it she had scrawled the most powerful surnames of Duskmere and the neighboring kingdoms, names she knew by heart from the days when she still moved through court on her father's arm. Without preamble, she told him the essentials, in the driest voice she could manage so it would not shake. My name is Renna. I was traded for my cousin, who is going to marry the man who swore he loved me. I need an escort who is absurdly handsome and absurdly rich for one night at their wedding. That is what I'm paying for, she breathed. Tomorrow you will smile beautifully and pretend you adore me. That's all. He lowered his eyes to the sheet and ran them down the list. Renna saw the corner of his mouth lift. What she did not see was what was happening beneath it. Absurdly handsome, she had said. She thought him absurdly handsome, and she had no idea of the damage those words did. The wolf inside Ronan stretched out, vain, ridiculous, and it took all his king's composure not to grin like a boy who had heard exactly what he wanted. Years of princesses trained to flatter him, and it was a she-wolf in a worn gown, who did not even know his name, who warmed his chest with a compliment delivered through a scowl. And then the other part of her words caught up with the rest. The man who swore he loved her. Her voice had tripped there, just a thread. But he had heard it. There was a man she had loved enough that the wound still bled when she spoke of him. And the wolf's purr turned to a growl, low, dull, jealous of a name Ronan did not even know, possessive of a woman he had met half an hour ago. Half an hour, he thought. I have known her half an hour. What madness is this? Choose a surname, she went on, oblivious to all of it. Memorize half a dozen details. Pretend you were born noble. I need everyone in that hall to believe you are exactly the kind of man she will never have. I'll have to find you decent clothes, she added, glancing sideways at his plain cloak. And she frowned. Because even for that, there was not coin enough in the lining of the mattress. It's going to be a lot of trouble. No need. His voice was far too calm. I'll see to that. See to it how? She crossed her arms. Do you have money? That small, dangerous smile came back. No. Of course not. He handed the sheet back without hurry. But I have a cousin. Who knows another cousin? There is always someone willing to help a man in a tight spot. The answer was far too vague, and Renna knew it. But she was far too desperate to press. His finger had stopped on a name in the list, and she did not see which. Halloran. The surname sat there, among the most powerful on the continent, copied down by a girl who had once heard that name at court, without ever putting a face to it. Renna had no idea she had just handed, on a silver platter, the name of the royal house of Korhavn itself to the very man who carried it in his blood. Halloran, he said, and let the word roll slow in his mouth, foreign, amused. That one will do. Renna raised an eyebrow and, against her own will, was impressed. Clever. She reappraised the man in front of her, arms crossed. I would not have thought of that. Halloran is one of the surnames of the royal house of Korhavn, and the Alpha King of Korhavn is in Duskmere right now, staying at the castle for the wedding. The city is full of his retinue. No one will think twice about one more Halloran moving through the hall. They'll take you for some noble cousin from the king's court, lost among the guests, She nodded slowly, almost pleased with herself. For a hired gentleman, you think fast. Beneath the stone calm, Ronan nearly laughed. Noble cousin. She had no idea how close to the truth she had come, nor how far. Settled, then. Renna drew a deep breath, hardly believing what she was doing. Tomorrow, at dusk, at the central fountain square. The wedding is at night. Don't be late. I am never late. He tilted his head, and his eyes dropped, just for a moment, to her mouth, before returning to her eyes. My lady. The heat climbed Renna's neck before she could stop it, and she hated herself for it. She turned her back and left before her face could betray her, certain she had found the perfect solution for her revenge. Certain she had bought herself just any hired gentleman. With no idea that, only a few hours later, that same man would cross the gates of the Duskmere Castle, not through the back door, not in a hood, but through the main entrance, announced by trumpets, received with bows, as the Alpha King of Corhaven, honored guest of the court. On the eve, it was the women of the Crimson Bathhouse who saw to her. There was no coin for a gown, but there were hands, and the hands of those women could work miracles out of scraps. Bet, the eldest of the courtesans, dug a purple gown out of the bottom of a chest, one she kept for special clients, and fitted it to Renna's body with pins and patience, taking in here, letting out there, until the fabric looked made for her. Another loosed her hair and tamed the dark strands into heavy waves. A third, saying nothing, dropped into Renna's palm the few coins still missing to pay the escort, and closed her hand over them before Renna could refuse. "We look after our own," was all she said. They were women the court pretended not to see. The ones who scrubbed floors, the ones who sold companionship, the ones the kingdom would rather not name aloud. And it was those very women who gave Renna back, for one night, the image of the lady she had once been. When she saw herself in the cracked mirror of the corridor, she barely knew her own face. It was not her father's gold that dressed her now. It was the outcasts of Lantern Row. And in some crooked way, that made her more beautiful than any silk she had ever worn. "Go on," said Bet, squeezing her shoulder, "and make that traitor of a lord choke on his own tongue." The central fountain square was filling with the first shadows of dusk when Ronan saw her arrive. He waited leaning against the stone of the fountain, dressed as the noble he swore he was not, because a king is never far from fine clothes, and his retinue had brought trunks to spare. He waited with his arms crossed, feigning a patience he did not have, counting his own thoughts. And then she appeared at the mouth of the square. The scent came first, as it had at Sorsha's house, pine and sea air cutting through the cold afternoon, and the wolf inside him lifted its head in a jolt Ronan could not hold back. But this time there was the sight of her too. The gown. The lifted chin. The straight shoulders of a woman who had decided not to crumble in front of anyone. The air left his chest. Ronan had turned down princesses. He had turned his back on heiresses, on whole halls of women trained from the cradle to please him, perfumed, rehearsed, perfect. And here he stood, breathless, before a bathhouse servant. "Mine," the wolf thought, before reason had a chance to argue. He shut his mouth, set the stone mask back in place, and offered his arm. If Renna noticed the way his hand trembled faintly as it touched her, she had the grace not to mention it. "You clean up well," she said, taking in his flawless dark coat, his bearing, his build. She frowned. "Too well, in fact. Where did those clothes come from?" "From the cousin," Ronan answered, easy. "Who knows another cousin?" "Of course." She rolled her eyes and laid her hand on his arm. "Come on. And remember, you adore me." He looked down at her, and his mouth curved into that small, dangerous half-smile. "That will be easy." The heat climbed her neck before she could stop it. The wedding of Lord Ferris and Lady Odette was the event of the decade in Duskmere, It had been years since the court had seen a union like it. The heir of one of the oldest houses in the kingdom marrying in grand pomp. Guests arriving from every corner of the continent, gold dripping from every candelabrum. Half the hall pretended to make conversation while keeping watch on the doors, eager to glimpse up close the name that crowned the guest list. The young Alpha King of Corhaven, old ally of the House of Ferris, whose mere presence would be enough to crown the knight. Renna did not set foot in the church. She could not have. To watch her cousin walk up to the altar, arm in arm with the man who had once sworn to be hers, was more than her pride could carry. So she waited only for the hour of the celebration. Renna walked in arm with her escort, chin high, set on nothing more than getting through the night without falling apart. And what she did not expect was the show he would put on. The man she had hired for a handful of coins moved through the hall with its floor plan drawn into his bones. He discussed vintages with an old duke and corrected him with a smile. He spoke of the northern lands and the price of grain with the calm of a man who reads a kingdom from the top of a tower. Conversations dropped as he passed, and no one quite understood why. Ferris found them in the middle of the hall, arm in arm with his bride. Renna. Odette glided up to them, her wedding gown rustling. What a surprise that you came, and... Her eyes traveled up and down the escort, weighing the coat, the bearing, the beauty, with company. Who would have thought, little cousin? Lady Odette. Ronan inclined his head, his courtesy so smooth it bordered on mockery. A fine wedding. It only lacked the essential thing. Odette blinked. The essential thing. Love. He took a sip of wine, serene. But they say gold hides that lack well enough. Her smile wavered at the corners. Ferris stepped forward, his chest puffed, determined to win back the ground. And you would be. The groom measured Ronan from head to toe. I don't recall seeing you at the Duskmere Court. These grand surnames that turn up out of nowhere make me wary. Halloran. Ronan let the name fall. Light. And it doesn't surprise me that you failed to notice me, Lord Ferris. Your mind has been occupied. So much debt to hide beneath a feast like this is hard work. The cup stopped halfway to Ferris's mouth. How do you... The overdue loans. Ronan counted on his fingers, unhurried, his voice low enough not to make a scene and loud enough for Ferris to catch every syllable. The mortgage on the eastern lands, the fortune your father swears on his life he still has, and that slipped through his fingers 2 winters ago. Ronan shrugged. The court talks too much, and I have a good ear. Ferris went the color of the tablecloth. That's a lie. Is it? Ronan smiled, and there was not a trace of warmth in it. Then prove me wrong. Here. Now. In front of all these guests. Go ahead, Lord Ferris. I'll wait. Ferris did not prove him wrong. He could not, because it was no lie, and they both knew it. The groom shut his mouth, his jaw trembling with swallowed rage, and it was Odette who had to pull him away by the arm before the humiliation grew too public. Renna stood still, her heart beating in her throat, not knowing whether to laugh or to run. She had come prepared to be the humiliated one of the night. And for the first time in months, she was not the one shrinking from the shame. Ronan leaned toward her ear. You're trembling, he murmured, his warm breath sliding down her neck. I am not. Renna barely moved her lips. You are. His mouth brushed her temple, and she felt the words more than she heard them. Let them tremble. You stay right here, chin high, and let them die of curiosity. You are by far the most beautiful woman in this hall. Have you noticed that half the men here can't take their eyes off you? The heat climbed the back of Renna's neck, and she had to dig her fingers into the cup not to give herself away. Stop, she whispered. Stop what? His voice was pure provocation. Telling the truth? Talking like that, in my ear. She closed her eyes for an instant and opened them again, fighting to find her footing. You're good at this.
At what?
At lying beautifully. Renna finally turned her face to him, too close, close enough to feel the heat of him before any touch. You almost convinced me. That small, dangerous half-smile curved his mouth. And who said it was a lie? Her heart took off. Across the hall, Odette watched it all with her smile growing harder. The cousin who had always been the portrait watched the dull version, being courted by a man who made her own groom look small, and the envy climbed her face faster than she could hide it. A few steps away, leaning against a column with a cup he wasn't drinking from, a broad-shouldered man watched everything and fought not to laugh. Bram knew that face better than anyone in that hall. He had spent half his own life trying to keep his alpha alive and out of trouble. And there stood his king, the most sought-after man on the continent, the one who turned down princesses the way other men turned down stale bread, playing the cheap escort of a ruined lady at the greatest wedding of the decade under a borrowed surname. How long until someone notices? Bram thought, and raised the cup to his lips to hide the smile. It did not take long for the host to find him. Where is His Majesty of Corhaven? Asked Ferris's father, red with impatience. We announced his presence to half the kingdom. By now he should have come in. Bram inclined his head with all the calm in the world. On his way, my lord. Your lordship knows how kings are. They like a good entrance. The answer calmed the host. It did not calm the hall. The murmur was already running from table to table. The Alpha King had not come. What an affront. What an unforgivable slight to miss the union of so close an ally. Some called themselves offended on Ferris's behalf. Others were merely disappointed not to see the man of the rumors up close. I'll wager His Majesty found the ladies of Lantern Row more interesting than a wedding, laughed a noble. And the whole table laughed with him, with no idea that the king in question stood 20 paces away, arm in arm with a bathhouse servant. And it was right in the middle of that chatter that an old wolf and count, who had served years before on an embassy in Corhaven, narrowed his eyes at Renna's escort. He looked at the jaw. He looked at the brow. He frowned, confused, turning over a memory kept too long. Then he went pale. By the gods, the count murmured, and his voice shook more than he wanted. That is the Alpha King. The name ran through the hall like fire through dry straw, from mouth to mouth, from table to table, until the whole hall sank into a heavy silence, and every eye landed on the man in black at Renna's side, the mysterious escort. He was the Alpha King of Corhaven. Renna felt the blood drain from her face. She looked at the man beside her, at the calm profile, at the steady hand around the cup, and the floor seemed to open beneath her feet. No, it could not be. She had hired that man. Odette was the first to recover her voice. A venomous smile curved her lips. So you didn't know, she said, loud enough for half the room to hear, feigning a pity that cut like a knife. Oh, little cousin, how embarrassing. He's only amusing himself with you. Everyone knows the Alpha King of Corhaven ties himself to no woman. He came for an allied wedding, found a pretty maid to pass the night with, and tomorrow he'll be back in his kingdom without remembering your name. Low laughter spread through the hall. Other guests took courage. It's obviously a joke, someone remarked. A king wouldn't turn up like this, by chance, arm in arm with that. The embarrassment crashed over Renna like an avalanche. Dozens of eyes on her. The laughter. The pity. And for the first time since she had walked in, she saw the size of the mistake she had made. She wanted to vanish. And then the man beside her stepped forward. His voice cut through the hall, low, and no one had to call for silence. You are mistaken. The murmur died at once. Renna is my fiancé. She turned her face to him so fast her neck hurt.
What?
Ronan did not hesitate for a single thread of a second. He ran his eyes over the gaping court with the calm of a man used to being obeyed, and the lie came out of his mouth smooth, whole, without a single crack. We kept it quiet because she is a discreet woman. Unlike certain people, his gaze landed on Odette, only long enough to drive the blade in. She has no need to turn her own life into a spectacle. He turned back to the hall. I had not meant to announce this tonight, but it seems I've been left no choice. Renna stood still, her heart hammering, her mind chasing the events without catching them. That was when he leaned toward her, low, too close, his mouth almost at her ear, and whispered for the two of them alone. Just go with it. And then, before the whole court of Duskmere, the Alpha King of Corhaven joined one lie to the next with the ease of a man telling his own life story. He said the two of them had known each other for some time. That they had grown close away from the eyes of the court. That he had used his visit to the kingdom to make official at last what already lay between them. To each pointed question, a firmer answer. To each attempt to poke a hole in the story grew, became a snowball impossible to stop, and the whole hall swallowed every word. Odette watched with her face turning more and more bitter. Ferris's eyes moved between Renna and the king, unable to hide his discomfort. What was meant to be the most important night of their lives had stopped being about them. Sensing the room slipping out of control, Ronan wrapped Renna's hand in his and gave the court a serene smile. "Excuse us. My fiancé and I are leaving." Without waiting for an answer, he led her away from the hall and the rain of questions that followed them. And on the other side of the room, Bram closed his eyes for a moment and brought his hand to his brow. He knew that look on the king's face. This was no part of any plan, and for the first time that night, the Beta understood that the situation had slipped entirely out of everyone's hands. He took her to a garden set apart, far from the music, far from the doors, where only the moonlight and a few torches fixed to the walls reached. The moment they were alone, Renna's facade collapsed, and she turned on him with everything she had swallowed all night long. "Are you mad?" Her voice came out trembling with rage. "Why did you do that? Why?" "Renna, I asked for an escort. One. Escort." She paced back and forth across the stones, the purple gown dragging through the dew. "To smile nicely and give me his arm. Not to turn me into a king's fiancé in front of the whole kingdom. Do you have any idea of the size of the lie you've just shoved me into? When this falls apart, and it will fall apart, do you know who becomes the joke? Me. Always me." Ronan let her empty herself out. When she finally stopped, breathless, he spoke, and his voice was far too calm for a man who had just turned the kingdom upside down. "The situation got away from me, I admit it." He leaned against the cold stone of a bench, his arms crossed. "But it may have fallen out better than any plan could have. For the both of us." Renna stopped. "The both of us. For years, my council has given me no peace." Ronan looked up at the moon, and for a moment the mask slipped, and what was left was only weariness. The elders, the council of the packs, the old men who guard the law and live to force a Luna down my throat. They arrange dinners, they negotiate alliances. They shove a noble's daughter into my path with every moon, and when I refuse, they threaten. An alpha king with no mate and no heir is a throne they think they can prod at. He met her eyes. An official fiancé, even a false one, even for a while, silences all of them at once. It gets the suitors off my back. It gives me peace. And what's that to me? Renna crossed her arms, wary. What do I get out of pretending to be your fiancé? Everything you don't have. The answer was blunt. Protection. Respect. A roof that isn't the back of a bathhouse. and the whole kingdom knowing, for the rest of their lives, that Lord Ferris was the man who traded a future queen for a jealous cousin. He tilted his head. You stay under my guard until the dust settles. Then, when it no longer serves either of us, we undo it far from the eyes of the court, and you go on with whatever life you want. Rich, free, avenged. Renna stayed quiet, her heart racing, her pride wrestling with her good sense. It was too good, too fine, and no man had ever offered her anything that did not come with a hidden price. Why me? She asked low. Of all the women on this continent who would give an arm to wear your crown, why settle for the servant who hired you thinking you were a nobody? Something crossed his eyes. It was quick, and he hid it before she could read it. Because you were the only one who was with me without knowing who I was, Ronan said. And that, lately, is worth more to me than all the crowns in the world. The silence that followed was heavy. All right. Renna drew a deep breath, and when she spoke again, her voice had found its thread once more. I accept, but by my rules. The corner of his mouth lifted. I'm listening. This is a contract, nothing more than that. She raised a finger for each item, firm. No feelings. No kisses beyond what's strictly necessary to fool the court. I will not sleep with you. And above all, she narrowed her eyes. No making me share you with others. I know your reputation, Your Majesty. The whole kingdom does. I will not be the foolish fiancée of a womanizer who slips out the back door every night. If I am your fiancée, even on paper, you are mine alone for as long as it lasts. In everyone's eyes. Ronan watched her for a long moment. And that small, dangerous smile came back. But this time there was something behind it that troubled its own owner. Because her condition stirred him more than it should have. Yours alone, he repeated, slowly, tasting the words. If that is how my lady wishes it. He pushed off the stone and stopped close to her, too close, and the heat of him reached Renna before any touch. Then it will be a pity. A pity what? When the time comes to undo this. He lowered his eyes to her mouth, just for an instant, almost a kiss, and came back to her eyes. It will be a pity. Renna opened her mouth to answer, and could not find the words. For the first time that night, she was the one left with nothing to say. Before leaving for Corhaven, she went back to the Crimson Bathhouse to say goodbye to the women who had held her up when she had nothing left. It was an uproar. When they learned that their old companion of the scrubbing brush was setting off as the fiancée of an Alpha King, the courtesans crowded around her with squeals and laughter, pulling her into the best rooms, examining the borrowed ring Ronan had sent to keep up appearances, asking bolder questions by the minute. A king. Bet held Renna's face between her hands, her eyes brimming. An Alpha King, girl. Look at the turn fate has given you. It's not what you're thinking. Renna went red. It's an arrangement, that's all. A deal. Nothing real. The women looked at one another and burst out laughing. Of course, dear, an arrangement. One of them winked, dropping down on the edge of the bed. And all that blush on your face, is that part of the arrangement too? I am not blushing. You're red as an ember. Another laughed, and they all began pouring out advice, tricks, things to whisper, ways to make a man lose his head, until Renna hid her face in her hands, dying of embarrassment and laughing at the same time. How long? Bet challenged, crossing her arms with a knowing smile. I'll wager 1 week before this girl is head over heels for that man. 1 week? Another laughed. Look at her eyes. She's already smitten. I am not, Renna protested, and the whole house laughed louder. She left denying it, chin high. But she carried with her the warmth of those invisible women, and she made herself a promise, quietly, as she crossed the door for the last time. Whatever her life became, she would never forget where she had come from. Arriving in Corhaven was like crossing into another world. The Northern Kingdom rose in dark stone and high towers against a winter sky, a fortress greater and older than anything Duskmere had. And the same people who would have turned their faces from a bathhouse servant now bowed before the king's fiancée. Ladies who days before would have scorned a ruined woman now vied for a smile from her. Seamstresses fought over the right to dress her. Nobles offered bows, gifts, places of honor at the table. Renna moved through it all with her chin high and a cold knot in her stomach, because she knew far too well the worth of those bows. They were for the crown, never for her. And she did not let it go to her head. When a maid too small for the work dropped a whole tray before the court and nearly took a beating for it, it was Renna who knelt to gather the shards with her, in front of all the scandalized nobles, the way she had learned in the back of Lantern Row. The women of the bathhouse were the only family that had held her up when she was worth nothing, and Renna had no intention of pretending she did not know what it was to be invisible. Ronan, from the high end of the hall, saw it all. And the wolf inside him stirred, pleased, in a way his reason still had no leave to name. "She's going to be trouble," Bram remarked beside him, watching the paper fiancé kneeling on the marble floor with a maid. "She is," Ronan agreed, and he could not take his eyes off her. "A great deal." And for the first time in many years, the idea of trouble did not bother him in the least. The forced closeness did what neither of them had foreseen. It began to blur the line between what was theater and what was not. They had to share their meals, seated side by side at the high table before the whole court. They had to ride together through the woods of Corhaven under the eyes of the guards. They had to dance in the halls, trade touches before the nobles, hold loving looks for an audience that needed to believe. And what had begun as performance grew, day after day, harder and harder to govern. Ronan provoked her without mercy. He kissed her hand at length before the counselors, his lips lingering a second longer than necessary over her fingers. He leaned to her ear in the middle of dinner and whispered some indecency about the nobles. He set his hand on her waist as they crossed a corridor and kept it there too long, far beyond what any onlooker required. At one of the dinners, with the whole court chewing in the reverent silence the king imposed without effort, he leaned to her ear. "Do you see the Duke, there at the end of the table?" His voice was low, intimate, indecent in its amusement. "The one with the crooked wig. He's been telling half the court he married 3 times on the strength of his own good looks alone." "And so?" Renna whispered back, without turning her face. "All 3 brides were blind." Ronan took a sip of wine, impassive. "Not one of them ever had the displeasure of seeing that face. It's the great secret of the man's happy marriage." Renna choked on her wine. She quickly brought the napkin to her mouth, her shoulders shaking, fighting with all her strength not to laugh in front of half the kingdom. "You're terrible," she whispered, her eyes brimming with held-back laughter. "I'm honest." He shrugged. "There's a difference." That was when she noticed that his gaze had dropped and stayed. "Your Majesty." Renna narrowed her eyes. "Could you stop staring at my neckline?" "No." The answer came without a shred of shame, and he didn't even trouble to lift his eyes right away. "It's part of the role. A man in love looks." "A man in love looks at the face." "That too." He finally raised his eyes to hers, and the dangerous half-smile was there. "But the face doesn't make me forget my dinner. The rest does." The heat exploded at the back of Renna's neck, and she stomped on his foot under the table, hard. Ronan didn't so much as blink, but the smile slipped a thread, and the old countess seated across from them sighed, touched, utterly certain she had before her eyes 2 hopelessly besotted betrothed. If only she knew. It took Ronan a while to notice something about himself. He had stopped looking at other women, the man who collected admirers from kingdom to kingdom, who walked into a hall and walked out with half a dozen proposals, simply lost interest in any face that was not hers. It took him weeks to realize it, and when he did, he had no idea what to do with the discovery. The choosing season opened with a grand ball in Corehaven, and half the continent crossed the snow to attend. The choosing season was the time of year when the packs gathered and the unwed sought a partner. From the waxing moon to the full moon, weeks of courtship and promise under the blessing of the moon goddess. For the court of Corehaven, it was the greatest event of the calendar. And for the Council of Elders, it was the chance to parade, once again, the daughters who dreamed of the throne. Among the guests from the allied houses came Lord Ferris and Lady Odette, he with empty pockets, after a loan from the rich crown of the north to patch the holes Ronan had laid bare before half the kingdom. She, after anything that would give her cousin back the humiliation she felt was hers by right. And Lady Sabine came too. Lady Sabine Rain was the candidate the elders had been pushing toward Ronan for more than 1 year. Beautiful in a cold, flawless way, daughter of one of the oldest houses in Corehaven, trained from girlhood to be a Luna. That night, she shadowed the king like a second skin. She touched his arm without leave. She laughed too close. She leaned in to bare her pale throat with every word, and spread through the court, in half a whisper, that the king's whim with that foreign fiancé would soon pass, and that he would come back to his senses in the end. Renna saw it all from across the hall, and the jealousy climbed her throat before she could swallow it. "It's a lie," she reminded herself, her fingers tightening on the cup. "The engagement is a lie. He isn't yours. You have no right at all to this jealousy." But her heart had stopped believing her own words some time ago. It was at that moment that Odette found her. "Little cousin." Her cousin appeared at her side with the same sweet smile, following Renna's gaze to the king and the beautiful aristocrat glued to him. "What a lovely couple they make, don't you think? Lady Sabine and the king. The same kind, the same blood, the same world." She sighed, feigning tenderness. "It's only what would be natural in the end. A king like that beside a true queen. Not a servant in costume." "Careful, Odette." Renna did not lower her chin. "You're speaking of his fiancée. For now." Odette laughed softly and her voice dropped to poison. "Enjoy it while it lasts, dear. Men like him tire quickly of cheap novelty." "You ought to know that better than anyone. After all, you've been traded once already." She touched Renna's arm in an almost tender gesture. "It would be a pity to go through the same shame again, before an even greater court." Each word struck exactly the wound Renna was trying to hide. She answered with her chin high and her voice steady, without giving her cousin the satisfaction of a single tear. But inside, the jealousy she swore she did not feel grew with every jab. And worst of all was the fear that Odette was right. It was Ronan who pulled her out of there. He appeared at her side out of nowhere, ridding himself of Lady Sabine with a courteous excuse, and offered Renna his arm before everyone. "You look like a woman about to stab someone," he murmured, leading her through the hall. "I'm giving it serious thought." She kept the smile of appearances up for the court. "There's no shortage of candidates." The corner of his mouth lifted. "Jealous, Renna?" "Spare me the vanity, Your Majesty." She laughed in mockery and went on. "I just don't want to become a joke again because of Lady Sabine." He led her to a stone balcony that looked out over the frozen gardens, in full view of half the hall, and stopped there with her, near the balustrade, where everyone could see them and no one could hear them. "The council is watching," he said, low. "I know." Renna did not lower her chin, even with the eyes of the elders weighing on her back. "So is Lady Sabine." "Good." That small, dangerous smile curved his mouth. "Then let's give them a reason to stop doubting us." He drew closer, his voice dropping. "A kiss. Just to convince the court. Pretend you like it." I won't have to pretend much, she answered before she could think, and wanted to tear out her own tongue. His smile deepened. They drew closer slowly, their faces a breath apart, nearer than would have been needed to fool anyone at all. The heat of him reached her skin before the touch. His scent wrapped around her. The whole hall vanished at the edge of Rena's vision, and she felt her heart in her throat, too loud, certain he would hear it. And then the line between theater and truth simply went out. Ronan kissed her for real. It was not gentle. It was deep, hungry, his hand rising to the back of her neck, his fingers burying themselves in her hair, his other hand firm at her waist, pulling her against his chest. Rena's thoughts stopped working. There was no court, no counsel, no charade nor contract, nor any rule. There was only his mouth on hers, the heat, the urgency, and the sleeping wolf inside her waking in a dull jolt, at last, as if the scent of that man were the thing she had been waiting for all along. When he finally pulled back, it was by a thread, his brow damp, his breath ragged, and his eyes had turned gold. Liquid gold rising from the depths of the iris, the wolf at the surface of his skin, dangerously close to breaking through. Ronan stepped back, stunned, realizing in the same instant what had happened, that he had lost control of something he had sworn to master for years. "Forgive me," he said, his voice hoarse, low. That went past what was necessary. Rena, her heart pounding wild and feigning a calm she was very far from feeling, lifted her chin and looked away from his golden eyes before she could lose herself in them for good. "I think we convinced them," she said. But her voice trembled on the last word, and they both knew this had nothing to do with the court anymore. After that night, the wolf inside Ronan became something else, possessive, restless, jealous in a way he had not felt since long before he took the throne. When Ferris, on one of his visits in pursuit of the loan, took it into his head to approach Rena in a corridor to rekindle a conversation she did not want, Ronan appeared at her side before he was even called, as if instinct had torn him out of a council meeting half a hall away. He set his hand on her waist, faced the ex-fiancé with a calm that ran cold, and Ferris suddenly found an urgent reason to be anywhere else. And Rena was no better. Every time Lady Sabine found a new excuse to touch the king's arm, to laugh pressed against him, to lean in too close, Rena felt her nails want to turn to claws inside her own hands. She reminded herself, every time, that none of it was real, that the ring was borrowed, that the contract had an end, that she was nothing more than a servant dressed up as a queen for a short time. And every time, her heart answered the same thing, quietly, stubbornly, a lie. The charade had cracked. They both felt it. Now all it would take was a single spark for what was held back to break free at last. And the spark was on its way, faster than either of them imagined. The spark came on the night of a ball, as everything in Corhaven did. Rena was crossing the hall with two cups when she saw it. Lady Sabine, leaning into Ronan by one of the columns, her hand flat against his chest, her head thrown back in a laugh too loud to be real, her body tilted close, far too close. And Ronan there. Still, letting it happen. Something broke inside her. Rena set the cups down on a servant's tray, turned her back, and left the hall before her face could give her away. She did not go to her chambers. She went outside, into the cold, into the gardens, and from the gardens to the dark edge of the wood that ringed the castle, where the music died and no one could see her fall apart. Fool, she told herself, her feet sinking into the thin snow. Fool. You knew. From the very start, you knew what he was. The ring is borrowed. The contract has an end. Why does it hurt so much? Because you fell in love. answered the part of her she had been silencing for weeks. Because you broke your own first rule.
Renna.
His voice came from behind her, and she did not turn. Go back to the party, Your Majesty. Her voice came out hard. Your Lady Sabine must be missing you.
Renna.
Ronan caught up to her, took her arm, made her turn. His jaw was clenched.
That was nothing. She came close, You let her.
She pulled her arm back.
You stood there still, and you let her.
What do you want me to do? She's the council's candidate. I can't simply...
I know what you are.
The words came out spat, the hurt spilling all at once. The whole kingdom knows. The Alpha King who collects women from kingdom to kingdom. Who ties himself to no one. I agreed to your game, Ronan, but listen to one thing. She lifted her chin, her eyes burning.
I don't care about your reputation. If you pretend to be with me, in front of everyone, then I deserve respect, above all else, or forget me. I don't need you. If I want to, I go back to the bathhouse tomorrow and become a courtesan, and there's a line of men who would pay.
No. The word came out of him like stone. Don't say that. Ronan's voice had changed, dropped into a hoarseness that was no longer human. Never say that again.
Why?
She took a step forward, defying him, her chest rising and falling. You don't command me. I sleep with whoever I want when this charade is over and...
The growl that came from his chest silenced the whole forest. It was fast.
His eyes blazed gold, the control of years shattering all at once, and the wolf emerged, huge, black, magnificent, and furious, his eyes fixed on her with a possession that had nothing civilized in it. Renna should have backed away. She should have felt fear. Instead, she felt the she-wolf inside her wake without a leash. The same she-wolf that had slept a whole lifetime, the one Sorcia swore was worth fortunes, the one Renna doubted she even had. It woke in a wrench, and Renna's body changed for the first time completely, bone and skin remaking themselves in the snow, until a she-wolf rose with her chin high before the king. More imposing than any Omega had the right to be, her pale coat gleaming almost the color of the snow. And it was in the instant the she-wolf opened her eyes that Renna understood. His scent, cedar, leather, and something wild beneath it, went through her with a weight she had never let herself feel. The she-wolf knew at once, with the certainty only blood has, mate. He was her match. He always had been. Since the bathhouse. Since the first breath in the dark of that corridor. And he knew. All this time, he knew. The discovery set her on fire. All her life, she had been Omega, the lowest caste, but on top of that, she was the one born without strength, without a pack, without anything. Her parents were Omegas. Her she-wolf never woke fully because an Omega, alone, without even her parents, was simply alone and weak, without purpose. That was what they said. That was what she believed. A lie. The truth was crueler and more beautiful. A she-wolf destined for an alpha's mate does not wake alone. She waits. She sleeps until she finds her match. And then she wakes completely, all at once. Renna had never been weak. She had only been waiting for him her whole life. Ronan's wolf stepped back half a pace, and beneath the fury there was pure astonishment. The servant, the she-wolf he had thought asleep, now rose before him with her teeth bared, enormous, defying an alpha king in the middle of the wood. Something no she-wolf of his court would ever have the courage to do. You managed to change. His voice sounded inside her head, deep, raw, stunned, the way wolves speak to their own. But you should never, ever, dare to face me like this. Don't give me orders. Her own voice echoed strange in her mind, and there was a growl in it Renna never knew she had. You are not my Alpha King. I am Omega. With no master, I owe obedience to no one,
not to you, not to any man. The two of them circled each other amid growls and heavy breaths, the steam rising from their muzzles in the freezing air. She did not give a single step. You knew. Her words came out like teeth. Since the bathhouse. You have a great deal of courage to defy me, he growled, his voice trembling between rage and something else. And you have a great deal of nerve, Rena advanced, to look at other women while you're with me. I order you to stop. Ronan's command came hard, but there was pain beneath it. I don't want to hurt you, Rena. Stop, please. You don't command me. And she lunged. Her claws tore his shoulder. Three red marks opened in the black fur. Ronan did not strike back. She lunged again, and again, blind with rage and hurt, pouring into him everything she had swallowed. The humiliation, the fear, whole weeks of hating herself for wanting a man she thought would never be hers. I will not watch you with another. Her voice broke in the middle of the growl. I will not stand there watching you smile at Lady Sabine, watching the kingdom push a real queen on you, watching all of them touch you while I pretend I don't care. I won't. I'd rather go back to scrubbing floors than share you with anyone at all. And with each of her blows, Ronan gave ground. The Alpha King, the huge black wolf who made enemies bare their throats without his ever needing to growl, gave ground before an Omega She-Wolf, step by step, without raising a single claw against her. He gave ground until his back met the trunk of a tree, and then he did the thing no kingdom would ever have imagined seeing his wolf do. He lowered his head. He bent his forelegs into the snow, and he bowed his enormous body before her, submissive. Then strike me. His voice sounded in her mind, hoarse, surrendered. Strike me until you're spent, if that's what you need. I won't strike back. I will never, ever raise a claw against you. He lifted his golden eyes, and there was no king there, only a man. You will never belong to another, Rena. Never. But hear the rest, because I have never said this to anyone. I am yours too. From the first time I caught your scent in that house, I was a lost man. I lied to the court. I lied to the council. I lied even to myself. For my wolf, there was never a single lie. You are my mate, and I bow before you as I have never bowed before anyone in this world. The enormous head lowered further into the snow, the throat bared to her. Before my mate, my Luna. Rena's rage collapsed all at once, and what was left in its place was too great to fit inside her. She lifted her muzzle to the full moon and howled, a long, ragged howl that was pain and relief and possession and love, all in the same voice, echoing through the whole wood of Corhaven, until the distant wolves answered one by one. Then she lowered her eyes to him, still bowed at her feet in the snow. Swear it. Her voice trembled in his mind. Swear by the moon goddess that you are mine alone, that never, as long as you live, will you belong to another. Swear it, Ronan. By the moon goddess who made me. His eyes did not leave hers for a single instant. And by every moon I have left to live. I am yours, Rena. Yours alone. From the first scent to the last breath. I swear it. He rose then slowly, his enormous body lifting again before her. And the submission gave way to something else. The old weight of the Alpha, now sharpened by a possession that no longer wore any mask. And you. His voice dropped, deep, inside her head. Never again. Never again dare to say you'll belong to another man, that you'll go back to the bathhouse, that you'll give yourself to anyone, that you'll share me with whoever it may be. Never again, Rena. He pressed his muzzle to the curve of her neck, possessive and tender at the same time. You are mine alone, my mate, my Luna, the same way I am yours. And Rena, who had walked into that wood swearing she belonged to no one, closed her eyes and let,
for the first time in her life, belonging to someone feel like freedom. And the whole wood fell silent, witness to the oath of an alpha king who knelt first. Odette found out through envy, which is the most patient of poisons. Something in the story had never added up for her. An alpha king who turned down princesses, suddenly engaged to a bathhouse servant, with no warning, no announcement. So Odette did what she did best. She dug. She sent trusted people to Lantern Row. She filled with coin the hand of anyone who saw an advantage in talking. And coin, as always, loosened tongues. That was how she found the man. A thin escort, just recovered from a fever, who told her, for enough silver, the strangest story of his life. The night a foreign nobleman had taken his hood and paid him a fortune to disappear, and how he had learned, afterward, through the rumors, that this nobleman was none other than the Alpha King of Corhaven. Odette listened to it all with a smile spreading across her face. The king's perfect fiancée had begun as a bought lie. Renna had won nothing at all. She had rented a gentleman of company to humiliate her cousin, and by an accident of fate had stumbled into a king. That was it. That was the weapon. Spreading it would destroy Renna's reputation forever, would cover the king in shame before half the continent, and would give the Council of Elders exactly what they needed to annul the engagement and shove Lady Sabine onto the throne. "Poor little cousin," Odette murmured, folding the words carefully in her head. "You're going to become a joke again, but this time before an entire kingdom." She chose a full court to deal the blow. After the night in the wood, Ronan and Renna had decided to stay together. But deciding was all there had been time for. They had barely had 1 hour alone to talk. There was still too much to resolve. The hurt of his having hidden what she was to him. The trust that needed to be mended thread by thread. The charade that, to the court, went on being only a charade. A wolf's oath in the dark of the forest was one thing. Holding to it in the light of day, before an entire kingdom, was another thing entirely. And Renna still did not know which of the two Ronan would be when the hour came. The hour came at the great banquet of the choosing season. It was the night before the full moon, and the hall of Corhaven was overflowing. The long table set end to end, the council of elders at the table of honor, Lady Sabine beside her father, Odette and Ferris among the guests of the allied houses, half the continent gathered under the same roof. It was there, in the midst of the music and the wine, that Lady Odette rose and asked to speak. And before everyone, she told it all. The bathhouse, the last coins, Madame Sorcia, the hired gentleman. And so that no one could call her a liar, she had the sick escort himself brought into the hall, who confirmed, with his head bowed, every word. "The king's fiancé," Odette concluded, her voice rising to fill the hall, "is no fiancé at all. She is a servant who bought a man for one night. His majesty was deceived, as the whole court was deceived." She turned to the elders, triumphant. "I ask this council, is this the woman you mean to seat on the throne of Corhaven? One who rents men on Lantern Row?" The silence that fell was cutting. The elders exchanged glances. Lady Sabine barely hid a smile. And Renna, standing in the middle of it all, felt the floor vanish once more. The old shame rose up her throat, and with it a cold, specific fear. The fear of looking at Ronan and finding in him the king who cared too much what the council thought. The king who had spent his whole life protecting his own image. She had seen him measure every gesture before that court 1,000 times. And it was one thing for a wolf to swear love in a deserted forest. It was another for an alpha king to stand, before half the continent, and with the crown at stake, by a servant who bought a gigolo. She saw herself ruined, again, before an even larger audience, and her eyes filled with water before she could stop them. "I will not give them that satisfaction. Not one of them." Renna lifted her chin, swallowed what hurt, and did the only thing pride still allowed her. She pushed her chair back, stood, and turned to leave that hall with her head high, before the first tear could fall in front of everyone. She took 3 steps, and then a hand closed over hers. Renna stopped. She turned slowly. Ronan had come down from the high table. He had crossed the entire hall, before the council, before the court, before a gaping Odette. And there he was, holding her hand, his fingers firm between hers, without the slightest sign of haste or shame. "Where do you think you're going?" he murmured. "Only for her." And there was an almost laugh in his voice, tender and dangerous. "The party is ours." Renna opened her mouth and found nothing to say. And then, without letting go of her hand, the Alpha King of Corhaven turned to the whole hall. "All true." His voice cut through the murmur without effort, and there was almost laughter in it, the kind that makes elders lose their footing. "Every word. She rented me. In a house of company. With the last coins she had in the world. With no idea who I was. She paid me to smile prettily and pretend I adored her." His fingers tightened on hers. "What she didn't know is that there was not a single instant in which I needed to pretend." The hall held its breath. "My wolf chose her in the first instant." Ronan did not let go of her hand, and his voice filled the hall without his needing to raise it. "Before I knew her name, before I knew anything at all about her, her scent had only to cross the door of a bathhouse, and he knew, the way only wolves know, that it was her. Only her." He let the words settle over the court. "And yes, as worn out as this may sound in a king's mouth, she treated me as a man before she knew I was a king. She cursed at me. She ordered me to smile prettily and pretend I adored her, without the faintest idea whom she was telling to be quiet. And that was when I began to love her." His eyes ran across the court and hardened. "But that was not what brought me to my knees. What brought me down came after. It was her finding out that I am the Alpha King, a man with the power to ruin her life with a single word, and facing me even so, without lowering her chin, without selling herself, without fearing me." His voice failed slightly, and he did not try to hide it. "I have no chance with this woman. I never did. I am hers. I love her. And there is not in this room, in this kingdom, in this whole world, another woman I would accept at my side who is not her." And then, before the entire court, the council, the kings and nobles gathered there, the Alpha King of Corhaven did what none of them ever imagined seeing. He knelt. On the stone floor, before everyone, he lifted Renna's hand to his lips and kissed it, long, his eyes locked on hers. "It is you I am going to marry," he said, "only for her, loud enough for the world to hear. If you'll have me." A tear escaped and ran down Renna's face before she could stop it. She, who had walked into that hall certain she would leave it ruined, now looked at the man her she-wolf had chosen, kneeling at her feet. Ronan rose, and his voice became an Alpha King's again, hard as iron. "Whoever has anything against this union, let him invoke the challenge." He ran his eyes over the council, over the court, one by one. "I will fight. For her, I will fight anyone at all." No one rose. Beneath the indignation, beneath the scandal, the elders of the council seemed relieved. The face of one of them relaxed for the first time in who knows how many years. An old elder let out a breath and murmured to his neighbor, not noticing that half the table heard him. "By the goddess, finally, finally he's going to marry and give us an heir." "So many balls," answered the other, shaking his head between astonishment and held back laughter. "So many princesses, years throwing heiress after heiress at his feet, and him refusing everyone. If I'd known the answer was on Lantern Row all along." On the other side of the hall, the reactions were quite different. Odette was white with rage, her fists clenched over her expensive gown, watching her plain cousin become a queen before her very eyes. Lady Sabine pressed her lips together, the envy running off her perfect face before she could contain it. Ferris stared at the floor, his jaw clenched, understanding too late the size of what he had thrown away over an envious cousin. And leaning against a column, with a cup he finally decided to drink, Bram was laughing. Laughing quietly, shaking his head, with the air of a man who had spent his whole life trying to keep the king out of trouble, and had just watched, defeated and enchanted, the man throw himself headlong into the best trouble of his life. It was only later, when the hall had emptied, and there was no more court, no council, no audience to fool, that Ronan found her in her chambers. "You didn't have to do that," Renna said, her back to the window, still trembling. "You could have let me fall. It would have been easier. The council would have loved it." "I know." He crossed the room and stopped before her. "And that is why I need you to understand one thing." He took her hands between his. "Out there, I spoke for the court. Here, I speak only for you." His voice dropped, stripped of all a king's arrogance. "I don't want you to stay for the crown. Nor for the protection, nor for revenge against Ferris, nor because my wolf says you are mine. Instinct is worth nothing if you don't want it." He drew a breath. "I want you to choose. Of your own free will. Not the queen. Not the safety. Just me. The man you rented, and who can no longer imagine a single night without you. If you say no, I undo everything tomorrow, and you leave here rich and free, as I promised. But I needed to ask once, with nothing at stake." His eyes searched hers. "Do you want me, Renna?" "You idiot." Her voice broke in the middle of laughter and tears. "I've wanted you since the fountain square. I was just too afraid to admit it." He kissed her before she could finish. The claiming happened after that choice, and only because of it. Under the full moon of Corhaven, in the silence of the room where there was no longer any lie between the two of them, Renna tilted her head and swept the hair from her neck, offering him the curve of her throat. Not because she needed to. Not because fate commanded it. Because she wanted to. "Are you sure?" His voice was hoarse, restrained, her hands held in his. "After this, it's forever. There's no going back. Every second of what's about to happen is a choice of mine," she said, repeating, without knowing it, the one thing he had always wanted to hear from someone. "Claim what is yours." His lips found the curve of her neck, warm, trembling with his own restraint. And when his teeth sealed the mark, there was no pain. There was a wave of heat that ran through all of Renna, from her to him and back. And suddenly she felt everything he felt. The desire, the relief, the loneliness of years finally ending. A love so deep it took her breath away. When he drew his lips back, breathless, the mark throbbing warm on her neck, Renna opened her eyes, golden for the first time in her life, and smiled. "My turn." Ronan raised an eyebrow. "The one who does the claiming here is me, woman. Come on." She was already rising, her hand flat against his chest, her teeth playing dangerously close to his throat. "You're big. You're strong. You can take it. Let me bite you too. You really never tire." But there was laughter in his voice, and surrender, and he was already tilting his head to the side, offering her the curve of his own neck. "I told you already. Before you, I obey." And the Alpha King of Corhaven let the servant who had once rented him for a handful of coins sink her own mark into him, and laughed, low against her hair, while the full moon rose over the kingdom. Spring came to Corhaven with the first flowers breaking through the snow. Renna did not forget where she had come from. The first order she signed as Luna had the bathhouse on Lantern Row, bought and turned into a shelter.
A safe roof for women without protection, without debt, without a master, where those who scrubbed floors and those who sold company could live without fear. Bet and the others wept when they learned of it. Ronan guaranteed each one of them protection and bread for the rest of her life, and never let it be known, because hiding the good he did was his way. Ferris sank into his own debts. Without the loan he had come to beg from Corhaven and failed to get, he lost the eastern lands, then the house, then the little of his name he still had. And Odette, who had traded the sketch for the portrait, found out too late that she had married the empty frame, a ruined, bitter man, unable to keep her in the luxury she had sworn she deserved. The cousin who had always been the portrait ended her days in a house too small for her own vanity. On a mild night, from the top of the wall, Renna looked at the lights of the kingdom she had once sworn she would never have, his hand resting on her waist, his chin propped on the top of her head. "What are you thinking about?" Ronan murmured. "About how I rented you for one night." She smiled at the lights. "And ended up keeping you for a lifetime." "Worst deal you ever made," he said, and she felt his smile against her hair. "The best," Renna corrected quietly. And there was not, in either of them, the slightest wish to disagree.